On the podcast today, we are going to dissect chapter 49 of the Tao Te Ching, which makes up the 49th episode of the 81 Meditations on the Tao Te Ching. And as usual, Guyang will read Jia Fu Feng and Jane English's translation, and I will read Derek Lin's translation.
The wise do not hold opinions. They are aware of the needs of others. I'm good to people who are good. I'm also good to people who are not good, because virtue is goodness. I have faith in people who are faithful. I also have faith in people who are not faithful, because virtue is faithfulness. The wise are shy and humble. They behave like small children. To the world they seem confusing, yet people look to them and listen.
The sage have no constant mind. They take the mind of the people as their mind. Those who are good, I am good to them. Those who are not good, I am also good to them, thus the virtue of goodness. Those who believe, I believe them. Those who do not believe, I also believe them, thus the virtue of belief. The sages live in the world. They cautiously merge their mind for the world. The people all pay attention with their ears and eyes. The sages care for them as children. This chapter is about how the sage has no solid identity and they have this pure innocence which can transform people. And this is obviously a theme all throughout the Tao Te Ching, but in this chapter we really hone in on this idea that the sage has a mind that is not fixed in a certain place, and they have no opinions and no agenda, and they allow the world to be as it will be.
Yes, that's right. The sage here is being good to people who are good and also to people who are not good, right? I don't think a sage here is to be good to both good people and not good people, because a sage himself or herself don't have any, again, like you said, discernment, have no identity. So that means not coming from the idea of that you need to be good to everyone, whether they are good or bad, because a sage don't have that sort of concept at all, right?
No.
Have no intention to be good, so to say, just naturally good. And so as when talking about faithfulness as well, a sage is faithful to everyone regardless of they are faithful or not, right? Because again, he or she doesn't have any solid identity or stance over what faithfulness is.
Mm.
So sage himself, herself, is just faithful in people in general, because that's what a sage does.
That's right. And that's the paradox, right? Because trust in Taoism is the paradox of unity. Or this is a parable for all life, right? Trust is a paradox of unity. So the sage has unwavering faith in the way of the Tao. Their whole life is dedicated to the Tao. And so if their whole life is dedicated to the Tao, then they have to trust the way of the world. And to speak to what you were saying, the sage doesn't have this dualistic mind. So they're not cutting the world up into this and that according to a type of conditioning that they've had. Again, when you're following the path of Taoism, it's a sort of technology to dehypnotize you from all of the conditioning that you've gone through. We could say it's the ideology of no ideology, right? Because it is not an ideology. But the sage is not a victim of these type of projections that ordinary people have of the world, of right and wrong, good and bad, evil, pious, so forth and so on. They are not the victim of that because they've cleansed out this conditioning, and so they've come back into that unwavering innocence, which is actually a non-dual state of consciousness, where they can see the world without the labels, without nama rupa, name and form.
Mm. Yeah, the first line is the wise do not hold opinions. And again, we mentioned about having an opinion. Having an opinion is just like an a-hole to everyone. Like everyone has one, but it all stinks.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah.
So that's pretty, I thought it was quite funny that because we were mentioning the other day.
Yeah.
So yeah, opinion is a big thing. Nowadays especially, people think that we think we matter to the world for some reason, especially when it comes to some sort of debatable, arguable topic of subject, right? But it doesn't matter what we think and doesn't matter what we say to the world. The world will continue to go on as it shall. And again, a sage will not have any judgment or discernment between this and that sort of opinion, although he or she might have one, but a sage knows that that opinion, that in the end, it doesn't really matter at all. Like it maybe keep it for yourself, really.
Yeah, of course. And you have to understand where your opinion is coming from. Why do you have this opinion? So it means that you have a certain indoctrination or conditioning that you're trying to protect. That's why you have this opinion. And so, as you were mentioning, in the modern day, there's a lot of people who think that you ought to have an opinion. And technology is the cause of this, right? When I grew up in the 80s, no one was overly opinionated. And actually, and I grew up in a multicultural community. And actually, if someone in the community was overly opinionated, they were often scorned or people kind of kept their distance because it was very strange to be so opinionated and politically oriented while everyone else is just trying to get on with their life, you know what I mean? Raise their kids the best that they can, make a good living for them, treat each other with love and respect, but don't tell each other what to do. And then if there was one person like that, they were often scorned and you know, actually that's probably the way it should be. That's why public shaming was outlawed 100 years ago, right? But we've kind of fallen back into that habit of publicly shaming people online because you can be a faceless coward behind your phone or your laptop or whatnot. And shame on you if you're one of those people because you're tearing at the fabric of humanity, at the nature of the Tao. But it's the opinions, as you said, which everyone is being trained to have these days, which is causing a lot of the problems. So if you're on the spiritual path or you follow Taoism particularly, then you know that an opinion arises from your conditioning, from your samskaras, from your subconscious, and that's how you view the world. That's what the illusion of Maya is, right? Maya is the illusion of measurement. So the illusion of this and that, the illusion of dissecting the world up into this and that according to your conditioning, according to your own subjective lens. And all of the Eastern spiritual paths are uncomfortable for a lot of people because it says you have to get rid of that subjective lens. And the more you work on yourself, the more you reorient your awareness within, as we talked about in the previous chapters of the Tao Te Ching, the more that that lens begins to thin out and disappear, and then you can actually see reality as it is, and you can see like a sage, because then you don't have a strong opinion, you just see it for what it is, and you allow the world to run its course in that trust, in knowing that the Tao is perfect.
Yes. The opinion came about when society became bigger and bigger, and the governing aspect became more important. I think that's why having an opinion is supposed to function as like just having a different ideas on some sort of public problem to be solved in the most the beneficial way for everyone, I think. But that would have been, I think, the more of a pure intention behind it. But nowadays, I mean, old days, the media was very simple, newspaper and magazine, like a more physical, written on a paper media, so that not too many opinions were spoken. So in a way, that's more, much more simple and kind of trimmed out unnecessary voices, for example, the ones who have some sort of reputation or some sort of, you know, credit to be able to talk about those things. But nowadays, again, we all know that social media, like you said, you can be a coward behind the screen, you can just be a keyboard assassin and, you know, you can attack someone and whatnot. We all know that's very harmful and unhealthy. So we are in a different age on having an opinion is actually not very productive at all. It's counterproductive, actually.
Yeah, for sure.
And yeah, but again, here Lato's perspective is having an opinion itself is unnecessary altogether. Why? Because like there is a law in the universe, there is a pattern in the universe, so that everything will take care of itself without anyone's interference. And we know that is the best way, but for some reason we find it hard to practice that.
That's right. And that's always the challenge that Taoism has thrown down to humanity, but humanity has never taken it on board. Because people say, oh, what about this circumstance or what about that circumstance? And it's like, you're missing the point here. Lao Tzu is saying that if you all didn't have an opinion, if you all allowed people to live their own lives and not interfere with their life, then there would be a natural harmony. But it's a commitment to following the spiritual path. It's a commitment to being dedicated to Wu Wei, to the path of non-interference and effortless living. But again, people will make all sorts of excuses. Well, how is that going to... And it's like, do you see that if we all did it, we're all not interfering with each other, we'll have less opinions? And so we won't be as vexed about certain things in the world. They will just all disappear. And to go back to opinions, if we look at opinions before the advent of social media and the internet, there were opinions still, obviously, a lot less opinions. But the opinions were thrown out there and framed a bit differently and seen with more common sense than what they are in the day, because you don't have faceless cowards behind their keyboard and this and that, where you're actually face-to-face with people speaking about things. So you could agree to disagree.
And they were accountable, yeah, to their opinion, of course, expressing their opinion.
Of course. Yes. And because in democratic countries you're supposed to have freedom of speech, which is being destroyed, but you could freely speak about things with people in public and agree to disagree, and you wouldn't hold any ill will to that person. But the way that social media is training people is to have ill will to someone for just thinking differently. So we create all of these artificial echo chambers where people feel like they're safe, but their safety can be destroyed with just one word, or you know what I mean? Like, it's a fake safe haven that they create. And so if you're inside, you are going through the process that Lao Tzu is recommending, you have kind of inner strength where things can go through you, but they don't stick. And so people, because they have an identity, things are sticking. And it's even more stickier. Like I mentioned before, technology and social media and everything, there were opinions, but they didn't stick for long back then. We could have public debates and we could agree to disagree. You even read about the debates that Shankara had at the time in India and stuff like that. They weren't at loggerheads with each other. They're philosophical disagreements that we will always have. But we usually extract something good from these type of disagreements. But you don't typically have any ill will. You know, Shankara didn't have any ill will to someone for thinking different. And that's where we've come as a society.
Mm.
And so this is why Taoism, as a solution to this, always said, well, what's the problem here? Well, opinions. And are opinions natural to human beings? No, they're not. They're learned. We accumulate opinions as we accumulate a sense of identity.
Mm.
And so if the accumulative sense of self is not real, then everything that bubbles up out of that accumulative sense of self is definitely not even, shouldn't even be considered,
yes,
as a reality.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that bubbling up that we hold on to and we think, well, that's what I believe, that's what I think. And it's like, well, that's not what everyone thinks. So what does that mean about your belief? What does that mean about your perspective?
That's right. Yeah, opinions and beliefs are all, especially nowadays, come from the wrong idea of yourself, again, that ego, jiva, identity, that's from that place. That's why it is sounds all absurd and kind of stupid in a sense.
Mm.
The real sense of opinion is something actually more constructive and productive, that you are actually accountable for, and you also have to have a open heart to listen to some other people's opinion on the same matter, that's how things can grow and evolve, right? Mm. That is a real sense of having an opinion. And that's how scholarship also grows as well,
yep.
Right? But again, that is at a more of a higher level, as like you were talking about Shankaras and other ancient philosophers. And that is why we have the knowledge to pass down to us, for us to study and to benefit from it, yep. Right?
That's right. I couldn't write books if I didn't take in different viewpoints. It's not that I'm stuck on a certain viewpoint. I appreciate all the different perspectives.
Mm.
And it's great, like mentioning Shankara, like you mentioned, if you look at some of those debates with, you know, Mahayana Buddhists and this and that, there's a lot to gain from understanding both sides of the coin. And look, the differences are, we're talking like subtle differences yes, here, you yes. know, really subtle differences, and probably only differences that mean anything to like an enlightened sage. Maybe to a layman, they might look and go, oh, I don't really get the difference. I don't have the knowledge to understand that.
Mm.
But if you understand it, you can see then why these disagreements in air quotes have value. You can learn things from it. And you and I, because of, you know, my books and everything that I do on the channel and that, we're often in a setting, not a lot of the time, but where we're with people speaking about philosophy and spirituality, where you're in a dialogue, but you're listening to people's perspectives and this and that in an open sort of place. Like, no one's really dog-headed, no one's really fundamentalist, where I think that in training people to be overly opinionated in the modern day, you're creating extremists. You're creating fundamentalists. And that's the problem. They're being trained to be fundamentalists because they're protecting their viewpoint.
Mm.
It's the protection of their viewpoint.
Mm.
And then once you have mass amounts of people protecting their own viewpoint, that's when all hell breaks loose.
Yes.
Because you can't live with each other then.
Yeah.
You become intolerant to each other. And so one must win at all costs. And that's what we see around the world all the time, more so in the modern day.
Mm. Yes, there is no more of that social cohesion anymore. No. Hence, the society becomes fragmented and extremely individualistic,
yeah.
And easily bring the conflict, sometimes with violence, which is just not good for anyone.
No. And as a lot of experts have said, like particularly in the West, the destruction of the West will be that lack of social cohesion.
Mm.
And that was probably by design by a lot of companies and that who don't like the West, right? Who have a vested interest in destroying tradition. They are trying to do the same things in India and this and that, but why they fail in India and places like that is because there is social cohesion.
Yes.
And so people need to be more cognizant of those sorts of games being played, and maybe not listen to the media, what they say, and understand that there's always a vested interest with particular companies and social media platforms and that are driving a certain angle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the environment's way more tricky. And so getting back to the sage, it's that innocence that arises from that sort of non-dual perception is why they gain the trust of the people.
That's right.
They're not going around with pamphlets saying, join my religion and this and that. People intuitively know when they're in the presence of a sage, because a sage doesn't have an opinion, but they listen, and they have a childlike heart, and it transforms people around, right? Because once you start to peel the layers away of your identity, that innocence comes back to you very naturally.
Yes.
It never actually left you.
Yes. The very last line, yet people look to them and listen, and the sage care for them as children.
Mm.
So, this part can be read as if a sage is like really want to lead people by example or anything like that. But I think it should be understood more of that, just the way a sage is, it naturally leads to people, naturally, like you said, naturally people look to a sage because of his innocence.
Mm.
Yes. And yet this paragraph can be a little translated differently by scholar because as a can be translated as virtue, or it can be also translated as just used as a verb kind of thing. So that just slightly changes. So a little bit different interpretation of that is that a sage embraces everything in the world. That could be actually coincide with the wise are shy and humble from just embracing the world as it is, right? And there is no separation in sage's heart. Yes, there is no dualistic heart in a sage. And ordinary people make discernment of this or that. A sage turns them like children with his innocence. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so again, the mentioning innocence. So in that sense, it actually pretty much coincides its interpretation that how the sage's innocence can be extreme power.
Yep.
To lead everyone else without intent to lead, right? That's actually true leadership.
Yes.
And here into the world, they seem confusing. They seem here as the wise people, the sages seem confusing. Confusing why? Because they're good to people who are good and not good.
Mm-hmm.
And they are faithful to people who are faithful and who aren't. So there is a consistent action in a sage, no matter what. Mm-hmm. So I guess in the ordinary people, like, is that person a little bit
loco?
Yeah, a bit crazy. Like, can't make a judgment over what's good or what's bad. But again, that is ordinary people's perspective, isn't it? Where the sage's perspective is not to have such agenda, what is good or bad.
Yeah.
To be purely innocent and have an open heart to everything and everyone and have consistent action is what a sage does.
That's right. And we don't want to extrapolate that idea of right and wrong, good and bad. Like, a sage knows that a noodle soup is delicious. They don't, it's a natural intuition.
Yeah.
So when we talk about right and wrong, good or bad here, we're talking about more of the subtle aspects of society and opinions and beliefs and conditioning. Obviously, with naturalness, I mean, if there's a bull running at you, the sage knows, well, I better run up that tree or get the hell out of the way somehow. Because a lot of people do, I'm only mentioning this because there are a small group of people who do exaggerate this, but that's, you're again, a lack of understanding of the tradition and so forth and so on. But it's the power of innocence, really, right? Like, where the sage is not dissecting the world up and this and that. It may look strange to other people because other people might say, what's your opinion on this certain political matter or national turmoil or this and that? And the sage is like, I'm indifferent to it. I mean, I don't even know enough about it. I live on the mountain here. I'm all good. I'm sweet. And why should I have to know, and why should I have to have an opinion? That's the other question that people say, like, because it's almost like people are trying to throw traps for people, like, what's your opinion? And if you don't say what's right to them, then they cancel you.
Yes.
So that's the world we live in now. They're throwing traps everywhere. Now, the sage could care less. You can cancel me all you want. I still live up on the mountain, right? And
it doesn't affect us. Yeah,
and this is why I love what Richard Wilhelm said in the introduction to the I Ching, where he said, though the sage may live on a mountain outside of society and following the path of the Tao, to other people it may seem like they're doing nothing, but they're actually creating incomparable human values for the future.
Mm.
And a lot of people don't understand it, but that's what this chapter is talking about. Through that lack of opinions, through that lack of conditioning, and through that humble innocence, the sage is transforming the world and people around them.
Mm.
And so that innocence is a power that we, as I mentioned earlier, we all innately still have, but this socialization, the conditioning, our opinions, our beliefs eclipse it. And you notice this when, particularly you and I, we take groups of Westerners to India and Nepal, and we're bringing those people from certain environments and we're bringing them into a completely different environment, right? And a lot of the time, particularly in rural India and Nepal, there's a an innocence that's on display. It's just, it's open, it's out there. These people don't know as much as what Westerners do. Again, going back to previous chapters, unnecessary knowing.
Yes.
Unnecessary learning. You know, this is why you've got kids now who go on their phones at 15 and they think they know everything, but they've lost something very important, which is that innocence. And they actually don't know anything because, I mean, if you're reading Wikipedia and you think you know something, then I've got newsflash for you. You know nothing. It's just Wikipedia. And so we've taken groups there, and just the people doing what they do, following the life that they live, it's had a powerful effect on people we've taken to India. Like sometimes people are in tears because I guess they realize how far they've come in their own society. Because that society, particularly in the West and in developed countries, we're trained in a dog-eat-dog world. And so there's no place for humility or innocence. But humility or innocence are two virtues of natural virtues that humans have. Being dog-headed, we learn that. We learn to be competitive with each other. These are all social traits that we develop.
And in that sense, I think it's a developed world. I mean, like a rich countries, as in the Western countries and some countries in Asia as well. It's like when you say like that, it feels like much more primitive society, primitive civilization in a way. Why? Because dog-headed mentality can only come from the survival mind, right? If you're really fighting for survival. Survival is what is not like some lion or tiger is chasing you. It's like the psychological survival game that we all play. Reputation, fame, status, what people talk about you, the perception, the display, all these things, right? All these things is to promote your image to others to be able to survive.
That's right.
And that survival is all based on, you know, finance, of course, and social status. Whereas a place like India or even Nepal or Thailand is a lot more civil. It's not very, you don't feel primitive. Why? Because they learn to live with one another. They learn to love, literally love your neighbor, love your enemy. Why? That's the only way they all can survive together, right? So when people say, oh, going to India or Nepal, these places, oh, why do you go there? What's there? Like, aren't they poor? And this and that. Well, I mean, they are not as wealthy as a Western middle-class people, but that doesn't mean anything, really. It doesn't discern anything about how they are and what kind of amazing people they are, really. It doesn't mean anything. So in that sort of world, the third world countries seems to be much more human and civilized world, because there is no such stupid competition and fight over their image.
They haven't lost that true wealth within. It's ironic, when we're chasing wealth externally, we lose something within ourselves. Now, it's not to say that we all shouldn't have food, clothing, and shelter. Of course, we should, and we all, that's our inalienable right as a human. But we are so fixated on that aspect, the karma and artha aspect of the world, right? Pleasure and wealth, worldly prosperity. And so in those parts of the world, they know that the true wealth is within. And I like what you said, that they are much more of a community than Western world, for example, or developed countries. And that all comes from that dog-eat-dog mentality of individualism. So you got to get what is yours, right? And when you go to Asia, for example, if you go to South Asia, you'll see that one person's happiness is the community's happiness. So everyone depend on each other, and it's a community, and people know each other's names and this and that. And I always remember my own childhood, where I grew up in a small community, multicultural community, and everyone knew each other. And then I remember my dad, he wasn't happy because there was a certain, there were people from a certain part of Australia that were moving to where I was living, where I was from, and they were big fans of high fences. And so everyone in our community didn't even have a fence. We all knew each other, you know, you knew everyone. And then these people were bringing in the high fence mentality. And it was like a sad day for my dad because he knew where they came from and they thought, these people think that that's progress in blocking out the world instead of having this collective community, right? And so we're seeing the detrimental damage that mentality is having on the world today.
Yes.
Because in smaller communities, we don't know our community. In national communities, we don't know our community. And in the global community, we still don't know our community.
Yes.
And so we're all at war with each other because we've bought into this idea of individualism.
That's right.
I need what is mine. And if I don't get it, I'm going to fight tooth and nail to get it. And that mentality is going to kill the world. It truly is.
Yes.
It truly is. Because we're not accepting each other. We're not loving each other. And it's almost like we don't even want to know each other.
Mm.
It seems like people are an inconvenience for other people in the world these days.
More like a hassle.
Yeah. You and I have had an experience recently where we hadn't saw a friend for a long time and we went and saw them. And for them, it seemed like we were an inconvenience.
Mm.
And so, you know, nothing was said,
mm.
but we parted ways. And it was quite revealing in a sense that how cold people can be to others and like to have a lack of care outside of their own little mini circle or their own headspace, so to speak.
Right.
And that's what technology is doing, right? We're creating this little headspace that we're trying to protect.
Mm.
And so there's no way community can thrive.
No.
It's always in the countries that have less technology that still have community. And there's a lot of mental health, like proper mental health, not mental health issues.
Mm.
The mental health issues are in the countries that have all the technology.
That's right.
So, and that's one of the big takeaways from this chapter is that if you have that innocence, then you love and appreciate each and every one around you.
Mm.
And that power of innocence is actually what can attract people to you, and you can transform them without even intending to do so.
That's right. Again, that being shy and humble are great qualities.
Powerful qualities.
Powerful qualities.
That's the Taoist path, taking that low path. And then in taking that low path, it has the power to transform the whole world. So guys, we hope you enjoyed and we'll see you guys next time.